Welcome to Menopause Reimagined. I'm your host, Andrea Donsky. I'm a nutritionist for more than 18 years, and I'm in menopause. I'm a menopause educator and menopause researcher. Today, I have a very special guest, but before I bring her in, I want to share something that I am super excited about. For the first time in Toronto, Canada, we are putting on a live in-person event called The Power of Menopause. This has been a dream of mine since 2018, and it is finally becoming a reality. I am hosting for the day, and we have an incredible lineup of more than 15 speakers who are talking about answers and solutions to perimenopause and menopause. I put the link below to register. The event is on October 21st, so it's coming up. It is menopause month. October is menopause month, so I hope you can join us. For those of you who don't live in Ontario, I know many of you are listening to this in different countries around the world. I am so grateful for you. Thank you for your emails. Thank you for your messages. I love hearing from you. You will be able to purchase the recordings after the event. So make sure you sign up for our newsletter. I'm going to put a link to that below as well so that you will be alerted when they are available. So now it is time for me to introduce our special guest. Her name is Myra Gibarovich. She's a licensed social worker, educator, author, trauma specialist, consultant, and adjunct professor. She brings more than 33 years of experience in social work practice and teaching, focused on helping people cope with and recover from adversity and challenges. Her life's work with Holocaust survivors has taught her valuable life lessons about resilience, adaptation, and recovery. Myra teaches practical techniques that help individuals enhance their physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual well-being. She is passionate about empowering people to tap into their resilient mindsets, so they can cultivate confidence and hope as they cope with transitions and life's challenges. It fuels her commitment to be of service and provides her with meaning and purpose. And she's a very special person to me because she is also my mother. Now, here's Myra. Welcome to Menopause Reimagined, Myra.
Thank you.
Now, for many of you, you might have heard or seen my mother's videos on TikTok. You're a TikTok sensation on my page. I've had so many women say, we want your mom to have her own TikTok page. And the reason why they love you so much is because you talk about topics that are really important for us as we get into this phase of life. So I know that we want to focus on the psychological part of entering into this phase of life. So let's start with what is happening to us psychologically as we enter into perimenopause and menopause.
So perimenopause is a developmental stage that intersects with our midlife search for self. Okay. That begins at approximately 35 years of age and lasts until our early 60s. Now, as we go through life, we go through different developmental stages in order to grow into responsible and mature adults. So during this phase of life, we may reassess where we've come from. We may take a look at our regrets, what we could have done, what we should have done. We may examine our milestones, our strengths, things that we're proud of, and also let go of aspects of ourselves that are no longer working.
So what you're saying is it's a reassessment of our life up to this point.
Yes, exactly. So we may be taking a look at past unresolved issues or present ones. We may be examining our relationships, our ambitions, relationship with our partners, with our parents. Some of us may be empty nesters. Children have moved out of the family home, and there are different responsibilities now. Maybe taking a look at our careers. Is this where we want to be at this stage of life? Some of us may have lost jobs and may be looking to redefine ourselves. And also we're experiencing health challenges, you know, so menopausal symptoms and other challenges during this phase of life. So as you transition into menopause, I'd like you and I'd like people who are listening to this podcast to answer this question. Do you see it as a passage into your wisdom years, or do you see it as your years of deterioration because of the symptoms that you're experiencing? And I'd like you to think about your answer, because your mindset will determine your intention and direction.
I recently did a video about, there was research on mindset and how we think about this stage of life. And when we think of it as a negative, that we have more symptoms. But I think it's also important to acknowledge that many of us, including me, when I was going through it, I was miserable. Like I had so many symptoms. I couldn't even function some days. So what's the difference between, like, I just want to be careful to not diminish how we're feeling and be like, oh, no, I'm going to feel great. This is fine, when we literally can't get out of bed. So how do we, I just want to be clear in terms of how we're looking at that from that positive mindset.
Absolutely. What you're talking about is toxic positivity.
Okay.
Where we deny our symptoms and we pretend that they don't exist and we put on a happy face. That's not what I'm talking about.
Okay.
It's really important that when you're not feeling well, you know, to tune into that, the fact that you're not, to give that a voice, to talk about it. But at the same time, too, it's also important to take some steps in making yourself better. Something that you can do in order to make yourself feel better. And it can be something as simple when you're having really bad hot flushes and you can't get out of bed in the morning and you're feeling sad, depressed, whatever. Something as simple as just taking the covers off and just standing up, going into the bathroom, washing your face. The important thing is to give yourself a message that you are in charge. You are in control. And my experience has taught me, my life's work has been with Holocaust survivors. And working with them has taught me that our vulnerabilities, our symptoms can coexist with our capabilities, with our adaptation, with our coping skills. Many survivors today are experiencing medical conditions, osteoarthritis, higher incidences of cancer, for example. Their traumatic memories are coming back. But they're at the same time, they're continuing to live life, continuing to participate in their activities of daily living, for example. So that's the most important lesson that they have taught me, that our vulnerabilities and our strengths can coexist. We need to show ourselves that we are still in control, that we are in charge. And taking baby steps in that direction is one way to do that.
I was just going to say, baby steps is really what it's all about. So can you provide some tips that we could do on a regular basis so that we can help ourselves to, so when we're in that feeling, or we're in the kind of the weeds, I always say it's in the weeds and it's hard to see out of the weeds when we're feeling those 103 plus symptoms, right? So what are some tips that we can do that, again, not the toxic positivity part, but acknowledging what we're experiencing, but helping to shift that mindset?
Right. So one of the things that we can do is mantras, having a mantra, positive affirmation, something that works for you. I am choosing to get out of bed this morning. I am tapping into my resilience. I am in control. And then writing it down and posting it on an area that you're going to be able to see it, on your nightstand, for example, on a mirror. And to focus on that for at least 20 or 30 seconds. And what that does is it creates neural connections in the brain. And that's what brain science is showing us. So we're making ourselves feel better. But the key is to do it on an ongoing basis so it becomes a habit. And it takes 21 days for something to become a habit. So that's one thing that we can do. Another thing that we can do, and I find that this is one of the most effective things that we can do, is deep diaphragmatic breathing. And deep diaphragmatic breathing, the technique has changed over the years, was first created by Dr. Herbert Benson in the mid-1970s. And at that time, it was breathing in through, it's the way babies breathe. So breathing in through the nose, extending our bellies, and then breathing out through the mouth and pushing our bellies back in. And then through polyvagal theory, we learned that the exhalation needs to be twice as long as the inhalation. And now the latest technique is, it's called cyclic breathing. And in cyclic breathing, we breathe in through the nose and filling in our lungs to capacity, and then taking in another breath when we're in capacity, holding for a second, and breathing out twice as long through the mouth. And that's one of the most effective ways to activate our parasympathetic nervous system that helps to calm us down.
What does it do? Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, it helps to calm us down. That's one of the most effective techniques that we can use.
I'm a big fan of mantras. We actually started, so for those of you who are listening and you are not signed up for our weekly mantras, please do. We're going to put a link below. So we started that probably about a year ago, where we, every Monday morning, we send out a mantra to the women who have signed up for it so that they can read it. And that's their mantra for the week. So they say the same mantra. So I am enough, you know, I have enough, well, you know, I can do hard things, you know, whatever it is. So it's one of my favorite things that we implemented. It's free. So anybody that wants it can sign up for it. And it's awesome. And we get such incredible feedback. So thank you for that. I love that. And I love the deep breathing. Both of those are very helpful. Is there anything else that you do that helps to shift that mindset?
Yes. I start my day by sipping green tea, a powerful antioxidant. I also listen to calming music. Mm. I respond very well to that. I say some prayers and I go out for a walk. And I go out for a walk in nature. And there's lots of research today into the benefits of nature.
I actually recently posted the video. I was with you on the walk when we were walking in the forest. And I took, whenever my mom and I go for walks, I always take video of nature. And then I just posted it on our social media the other day, talking about how we can lower cortisol. So yes, Shinrin Roku, yes, amazing in terms of helping us to balance that, you know, just to feel less stress, right? There's so much research behind that now, which is incredible. So yeah, I love that.
Absolutely. And I encourage you to seek out strategies that work for you.
Right.
And so that's really important so that you have your own toolbox. Mm. Some people like to practice yoga. Some people like to exercise. Doesn't matter. What is it that works for you? And you create your own toolbox that you can then practice.
Mm-hmm. And I think mindset, I mean, it is such an important thing, especially because we're not feeling good. Many of us are not feeling good. And although there are a lot of us that also feel amazing. I've heard from so many women that they feel incredible, that we're setting down boundaries now. We are reinventing ourselves. Like, there are so many positives of being in this phase of life too. I have to say, for me, it's been, I mean, obviously, as I was going through it and having so many symptoms, that part was really tough. But then once I came out on the other side, I definitely noticed a big change in my self-confidence. And, you know, it's interesting. And the research that we did for at Morphus through our surveys, and for those of you who have not filled out our research surveys, please do. We'll put a link to it below to get to the main page. But your feedback helps us so much to understand the symptomatology of perimenopause and menopause. What are the symptoms you're experiencing? One of those symptoms is a lack of self-esteem, especially as we're going through that transition. But once we're on the other side, I find that my self-esteem has improved a lot because I realize my value. I realize all the work that I've done to this point. I've been able to understand, okay, here's my superpower, what I'm really good at, and then here's what I'm not so good at. So kind of seeing things more clearly. So there is a lot of positive as we do go into this phase of life that helps with that mindset.
Yeah, absolutely. And what you're talking about is enhancing our self-esteem is just so important. It's an important starting point because self-esteem is the emotional value we have of ourselves, our self-perception. And we always have self-esteem. It's either high or low, usually somewhere in between. And with good self-esteem, we're in touch with our needs and we express them to people. We set boundaries. We're proud of our accomplishments. And we live a generally very healthy lifestyle because we feel that we are deserving of that. And then with low self-esteem, we turn to other people for validation. We surround ourselves with toxic people, people who continue to put us down, and we suffer from what's called the disease to please. Mm,
so many of us do.
Yeah, yeah. And the issue of assessing who we surround ourselves with is such an important one, be it in a romantic, intimate relationship, be it friendship. It's really important to take that assessment. And are we surrounding ourselves with toxic people, people who put us down, people who criticize us, people who don't lift us up, people that when we leave them, they're energy vampires. We feel depleted. Because the better we feel about ourselves, the better we respect and honor ourselves, the more we feel deserving of surrounding ourselves with people who lift us up. It's an important realization at this stage of our lives.
And that's part of that reassessment that you were talking about in the beginning, that we're taking, I call it inventory of self. I've come up with that term, is we're taking inventory of self. What's working? What's not working? Who do I want? What do I want more of? What do I want less of? And in some cases, that's relationships with friends. You've done several videos on relationships with friends. It could be a partner. It could be work, like you said before. So I think that's an important point to acknowledge and to really honor as we get into this phase of life, because it's such a great opportunity to be like, okay, so now I'm in the third act. You know, what's working for me? What's not working for me, right? So especially for many of us, as our kids are getting older, moving out. I mean, a lot of us still have younger kids at home, including myself. I had babies in my 40s, if we have babies in our 40s or later. So it's an interesting time being in perimenopause and menopause at this juncture, because Gen Xers, we've got, you know, many of us still have kids at home or their kids have left. And many of us still have aging, you know, parents that we're taking care of. So I feel like it's a very, on one hand, it's like a very stressful time for many of us. And on the, at the other hand, you know, it's a time for us to really kind of have that reinvention. Let's talk about, because this is your superpower, talking about superpowers. Let's talk about caring for aging parents. So for those of us who have, whether it's parents or aunts and uncles, whatever it is, if we are caring, we are caregivers and caring for others, what are some things or some tips that you could share with us?
Yeah. Well, I'd like to talk a little bit about the psychological dimension of being a caregiver, or sometimes it's called a caretaker. And by the way, the majority of caretakers, 70% are women. And women taking care of, let's say, their own families, but also their partners' families. Now, depending on the quality of the relationship, during the earlier years, taking care of a parent may, people may respond in a very loving way, and they're very willing to do it. But if the parent was critical, if the parent neglected their children, there's going to be resistance. And in other words, it's payback time. You treated me that way when I was younger. I'm now going to treat you in a whatever disrespectful way. I'm going to neglect you. I'm not going to be in touch with your needs. I'm not going to meet them. So that's an important dimension of being a caregiver. Like, where are you at? And I see different ways in which people respond. Some of them lovingly, other ways it's strained relationships, other ways it's extreme intense relationship whereby they don't trust anybody else to come in, or it's estranged whereby they want to have nothing to do with the parent. And many adult children feel overwhelmed because they are the sandwich generation, right? So they're taking care of their, if they have families, they're taking care of their own nuclear family, children, and then also now needing the needs of the, meeting the needs of their aging parents. And so, you know, who do I give my loyalties to? And it's particularly difficult for only children who have no siblings, where the onus of responsibility falls on them.
Yeah.
And there's also what I call the unresolved parent-child dynamic, whereby parents have controlled their children's lives and didn't respect their autonomy or encourage their independence. And children are pleasers. They want to please their parents, and they leave their parents sometimes in very difficult situations. And sometimes a crisis happens before the they take charge of the relationship. So there's all that. There's also intense feelings. People feel guilty, women especially, I'm not doing enough. And this leads to burnout. It leads to anger. It leads to frustration. I'd also want to talk a little bit about the social dimension. There are differences, because in ethno cultures, there's more of a focus on respecting older people, respecting their wisdom. So in China, for example, in Japan and Southeast Asia, so there is a difference. So legal aspects are important. Advanced directives are important. You know, end of life planning is important. I've worked with families where the children didn't know anything about their parents' finances. There was no will. There was no mandate in case of incapacity. So if they become disabled, do they want to be resuscitated, for example, if they have a heart attack or a stroke? Those are important considerations. So it's important to have a list of documents. You know, it really helps with finalizing the estate when a parent dies. There's also workplace disruptions. You know, some adult children, offspring, take a leave of absence. They lose pay. So there's financial considerations. So there's a whole host of issues. The important thing is practicing self-care, knowing what your limitations are, knowing what you can realistically do and what you can't realistically do. Guilt is a feeling that may be there and you may not be able to get rid of it. And that's okay. But just look to minimize it. And an affirmation that I like to use or present is, I'm doing my best, and that's good enough. It's really an important one when you are in a caregiving situation. And also setting limits on what you can do. I mean, we did this, my brother and I did this with my dad. My dad could no longer live on his own. He was experiencing falls. And we knew it was time for him to move into a residence. We knew that it couldn't work if he moved in with one of us. We were clear on that. And so my brother and I held a meeting, a conversation, and felt it was time for the next stage. And when we presented it to my father, he said, absolutely not. I'm not leaving my home. And we then set boundaries on our involvement. So, okay, if that's the choice that you're making, you can choose to be at home, but we can no longer help you to the same degree that we've been helping you because we're burning out. And especially my brother, he was what's called the primary caregiver because there's usually someone who is more involved. He's single and I had a family, so it was very different. And then we gave my dad choices, you know, so these are some residences. We did our due diligence, explored what was available, presented it to him, and asked him to try for 3 months, because most residents will allow you to do a 3-month trial. My experience has been that after 6 months, parents get used to the new environment. So it's, you know, taking charge, having difficult conversations with your parents, having an adult conversation with parents. And but in situations where parents suffer from some type of cognitive incline, some type of dementia, right, it may not be possible to do that. So these are some of the things that come in. It's a very challenging area. It really is. And we see more and more of it, you know, now during our menopausal years, as our parents are getting older, getting more dependent, you know, but then we have parents too, the baby boomers, who's continued to thrive and, you know, continue to live their lives to their fullest potential. So there's varying degrees, you know.
So how do you broach the subject? Like, how do you say to your parent, like, and I know this is something, so you being who you are and the work that you do, you were like, we're three siblings. So you're like, here's all my stuff. And you gave each of us an envelope with all your information. But for my dad, and my parents are no longer together, they haven't been for a long time, you know, it was a harder subject to kind of bring up, you know. And I know, especially if, you know, any of us, and I'm talking, you know, for my personal family, you know, my brother has an issue with the topic of dying and topic of, you know, no longer being around. So it was a harder thing to talk about. But I've said to my dad several times, I'm like, Dad, we need all your information, because if God forbid something happens, like, we need to know what's going on. So how does one bring that up to a parent?
Yeah, that's a really good question. It's to initiate the conversation and to tell them why you're needing this information.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what you did. And some parents may be resistant in sharing financial information, you know, but the more you keep on bringing up the topic and not going away from it, because what happens sometimes is that because the parent may have a negative response, may not want to do it, then the conversation is dropped. The children have difficulty with conflict. The thing is, pick it up again and pick it up again and let them know the reasons why you're focusing on this. And then eventually the parent may, you know, give in and may give you the information.
And I said to Daddy, like, I mean, for me, I was like, Dad, if God forbid, like, if something happens, then you're leaving the three of us scrambling. And I said, we can't scramble to find out every aspect of your life. And I was been very, you know, I've spoken to him about it several times, and he was resistant about giving us things, right? Or because it's also our parents facing their mortality, which is a big thing.
Yeah, absolutely. It's them facing their mortality if you're asking these questions about advanced directives, for example, but it's also us facing their mortality. So we may want to drop the conversation or may not want to have that conversation.
Right.
Because our parents are now in the last stages of their lives, and we need to face their mortality as much as they need to face their mortality.
It's so true. I mean, I can't even imagine you not being around. You're like my best friend. like, and I think about that. I'm like, oh my God, like that's so, but it's so true. Like having that thought that your parent might not be around. So, but you know, for Daddy, like he's in his 80s, and I'm still waiting for it. Let's put it that way. I'm still waiting to get everything. And I've brought up the topic many times. So are there any tips that you could provide us to, so you're saying keep going, keep asking the questions. What about being sensitive to the topic? So for those of us who haven't spoken to a parent about it yet, what are some ways that we can approach the language?
Yeah. So I dealt with this in one situation because the parent of this woman, he was in the hospital and they didn't know if he was going to make it. And then to start with, you know, acknowledging your discomfort, you know, Dad or Mom, you know, I'm having great difficulty bringing up this topic with you. And I hope you understand the reason why I'm bringing it up. But I really need to know, you know, I need to know more information about what your wishes are. I love you. And I want to make sure that your wishes are respected and that I will abide by what your wishes are. So please work with me. Mm. Please, please, please work with me, because it will be so much easier for me. And that approach, a sensitive, loving type of approach generally works.
And what about for a child who doesn't have a great relationship with their aging parent?
Well, they have a decision to make. You know, they have a decision to make if they want to have this conversation with their parent. And if they do, again, to have an adult conversation with them, there's some information. So to approach the parent, I know that we haven't had a close relationship over the years. And if they want to have a better, closer relationship, then to say that. At this stage of your life, I really would like us to become closer. But you can't go right into advanced directives if you've had a strange relationship, right? It looks like all you want is their financial assets. So you need to be careful about that. You need to first begin to build the relationship, you know, before you go into that direction. But also to let them know if they don't have advanced directives and the government steps in. You know, the government steps in and makes the decision about who's going to be the beneficiary of their assets. That's another one that's a motivator for people.
That's a good point.
You know, so make an informed decision about who you want to be the beneficiary, or else the government will step in and they will make the decision.
That's a really good point.
Those can be motivating factors too.
That was excellent information. So thank you for that. The last thing I want to talk about is self-care, because you talked about how we're the sandwich generation and we're so busy taking care of our kids and our parents. What can we do for ourselves?
Yeah. As women, we are not taught to put ourselves first. We're taught to take care of others and to put ourselves last. And when I ask women to tune into their needs and what would they like, some women are like caught off guard. My needs? I don't even know what those are. So it's really important to be in touch with what they are. And it's tied into self-love. Self-love has really gotten a bad rap because we tend to see it as being selfish and self-absorbed, narcissistic sometimes. We don't like it. But it's really important that we recognize our own self-worth, because the longest relationship that we will have is with
ourselves,
right? So here are some tips for self-care. Carve out me time with no interruptions. And something that you do to please yourself, something that you do to take care of yourself, something that you enjoy doing. And you know what that is, but do it. Also, find a place for yourself in your home, some place that you can go to that you feel comfortable in. And it can be something as simple as a comfortable chair. Teach people how to treat, we need to teach people how to treat us. And then we also need to tune in to what to say yes to and what to say no to. And I want to just mention the podcast, Andrea, that you encouraged me to watch with Julia Dreyfus interviewing Jane Fonda.
Oh, yeah, I love it.
And
wiser than me.
Exactly. She's 85 years old. I'm 76 years old. And she said that she's learned something really important, that no is a complete sentence. And that just was like, wow, that so spoke to me, because I can say no, but I usually qualify it. Oh no, and I make excuses. Oh no, I can't do that because. And for her, there was no need to do that. Yeah. No is a complete sentence. So
less
I'm working
more
on that one. I'm working on that one. And also injecting glimmers into our lives. I love the term glimmers. Glimmers are happy moments. Things that we do that make us feel happy. They can also be called daily doses of delight, DDD. And I like to do it when I go out for my daily walks. So I focus on a robin. I focus on a squirrel. I focus on a leaf. Now the leaves are falling here in Toronto. The beautiful colors of the different maple leaves. I focus on that. Something that makes me feel happy. And recently, I learned the distinction between happiness and joy. Happiness is something that we focus on, external event, something that makes us happy. But joy is an internal process, something that comes from within. So that's what I'm looking to do more of. And getting in touch with my needs is one way that I do that. What is it that makes me feel good? And I don't just need to do it to apply to taking care of others, comforting others. What about me, my relationship with myself? And also, it's important to reach for support if we can't do it for ourselves. You know, reach for support by a friend, a family member, a therapist. Yeah, and the following affirmation that I use is, I am important enough to do this for myself.
I like that. I am important enough to do this for myself. Everyone repeat in your head, if you're in a busy place or, you know, or out loud, I am important enough to do this for myself. Yeah. I am important enough to do this for myself. I love that. Oh, I got the shivers. I like that. Yeah. I am important enough to do this for myself. And I think that's the key, right? Because we're getting, you know, so many of us are pulled in a million directions. So doing something for ourselves is so important. And even if it's only a few minutes. You know, I remember when I was raising my kids, like I couldn't even go into the bathroom without, you know, everyone barging in the bathroom, right? So like a lot of the time we don't have that time or space. So finding something or somewhere that works, I think, I love that. That's amazing. Mom, this has been amazing. How could people reach out to you if they wanted to ask you questions or to work with you?
You can reach out to me through my website, www.myragibarovich.com, and I'll be happy to get back to you.
Perfect. And you will be at our live event on October 23rd. So if you come in person, you'll get to meet my mom and you'll get to meet me. So I'm so excited. This has been fabulous, amazing tips, and we really appreciate your time.
Thank you. It was a pleasure. Always is a pleasure to be with you. So thank you for inviting me.
That was amazing. And not only because it was my mom, but it was such good information, especially as caregivers. We are the sandwich generation, ladies, and understanding how to take care of our families and our aging parents. That was priceless. I just loved her tips and loved her information. If you loved our podcast and our interview today, please share it, because the more you share shows you care. And please leave a review, because your reviews mean the world to me. So please let me know what you think about our podcast, Menopause Reimagined. Thank you for spending the last hour or so with me. I'll see you at the next interview.